How about we deconstruct hell for a moment? The word in the Old Testament is Sheol or Sha'ol, and it simply means the grave. And there's no reference to it that really speaks to the afterlife. It's actually about the power of death and the insatiable appetite that death has for life. Think of an open grave that wants to swallow life up and gobble it up. In the New Testament, it's translated from the Septuagint right into the word Hades, which is a Greek underworld. And unfortunately, it kind of borrowed some of those ideas along with, it came with some baggage with the word. The word hell is not in the Bible. It's a Nordic word. So when we look at this text here, I think it would be good to think about not what this means, like we Lutherans often ask, what does this mean? And we dissect things and we exegete and all this stuff. But maybe a more important question, what effect did Jesus want to have on his hearers? And it was just before this that Jesus said, actually, Luke says of the Pharisees that they were lovers of money. He told them that you cannot love both God and money. And now I think Jesus' point, the effect that he would like for us to realize is that we cannot love our neighbor and money either, that it's an hindrance. It could be a hindrance to us loving freely and fully. So when we look at the rich man and Lazarus, think of Dante's Inferno. Think of a satire, of a tour of the Inferno, or here, a tour of the grave, of death. Or maybe even better, think of Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol. Think of Jacob Marley coming from the dead with the chains, his ghost, scaring Ebenezer Scrooge. Think of how the ghosts of Christmas past, present, and future cause Ebenezer Scrooge to take a spiritual inventory of his life, to go into the archives of his past and into his soul and work through an understanding that he has actually constructed around him a personal hell. Unable to love, unable to receive love, unable to sustain the love of his past, and he becomes hard-hearted. And then in the present, he's unable to experience the joy of Christmas that he sees his nephew celebrating, or even Tiny Tim, even though he has a disease or a handicap. And then part of this tour also is his mortality, knowing that he could possibly live uncelebrated, unloved, unmourned, while having a little taste of the kind of grief that the family would have in the death of Tiny Tim. There's this great chasm between what Lazarus experiences, whose name means the one whom God helped, and this unnamed rich person who has five brothers. And notice that the rich man is unchanged. He still wants to send Lazarus on errands. Dip your finger in water and put it on my tongue to give me some relief. Oh no, send Lazarus back from the dead to warn my brothers. He's still clannish. Still tribal, still privileged, still hoarding, still unable to see Lazarus and his suffering and need, and also unable to see his own captivity and his own personal hell. When I was in Chicago, we had a chaplain, a good friend of mine who worked at Stateville, which was kind of it was actually Joliet prison. When they closed it down, they started Stateville and put the prisoners in there. And I was invited multiple times to go and meet this group that were studying books. They were studying the Bible. And I'll never forget meeting Jesus. And Jesus was a very thin young man, Latino, Hispanic man, who had tattoos over every part of his body. He had all up in his hands, his fingers, his neck, his face. He had the very haunting teardrop tattoos that meant that he had the number of those he had killed in his gang warfare. And he was very eager when I first met him to ask me a question. He was so excited. He said, "Why are you here? I want to know why you are here." And then he folds his arms. And thankfully, I was forewarned and honest and vulnerable to him. I said, "Well, I heard all about you, and I'd like to hear your stories. I'd like to hear about your journeys and what God has taught you in your life." And so he did. He said he was in an abusive home where he was neglected and physically abused, and he found his family in the Chicago gangs, the Latin Kings. And he said that, "I believed in the lie that they were my family. I believed in the lie that I had to do things in order to be a part of this family. I believed the lie that I had to take vengeance for all the suffering that we received. And I believed in this lie that perpetuated itself and has landed me right here where I am." He said, "It took me 2 years of sitting in my cell before I realized that I had believed a lie and where I started to take responsibility for that." And in realizing that, I found that I'm now free. And I'm now forgiven, and I have a second chance. And that great chasm, these are my words, between death and life has now been bridged. I have that hope, and I have that love now in my heart.